following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News. Here are your hosts, Olivia Reiner and Tom Silverstein. Welcome everyone to the Packers News JS Online Green 19 podcast alongside Tom Silverstein. I am Olivia Reiner. We are here today to wrap up the Packers 32-18 divisional round victory over the Los Angeles Rams at Lambeau Field in front of over 8,000 fans last night, Tom. It was loud. I was shocked at how loud over 8,000 people can be. And you know why they were so loud? You know why?
Why? Tell me.
It's because of those gosh darn signs that the Packers handed out. They handed out these plastic signs to everyone. Those
placards, yeah.
And they were banging them on the metal benches, which was, you know, genius. Honestly, it made it feel like there were truly 50,000 people in the stadium last night.
Yeah, it did. It did. And I think it's also a matter of sensory perception, because we've been listening to nothing for all season long. So 8,000 people sounded really loud. I mean, even when they were cheering, it sounded loud, because, you know, we, for the last almost 12 months, have not been around crowds, you know, just in general in our lives. And so I think that plays a big role. You know, I hope everybody stayed safe and it was good for them, you know, that they were able to social distance and everything. It certainly made a difference.
It did. It was quite the racket. I was like, I was unable to think at points inside of the press box. And that was me inside of the press box. Granted, like you mentioned, I haven't been around crowds. No one's been around crowds for the most part, or nobody should be around crowds, I should say. But it was really loud. It almost sounded like a heavy storm. It sounded like water, like really loud water droplets. I don't know if you felt the same way.
I noticed the ebb and flow of the noise based on what was going on the field. And you just hadn't felt that ever since that very first game. I have a very strong memory of the first game in US Bank Stadium. And every time you would expect something, a big play, and it would just be silence, or it would just be a couple of guys on the sideline cheering. And that was so foreign. And then throughout the season, it's not been foreign. What was foreign was hearing people cheer when something happened.
And Lil Wayne was there to lead Roll Out the Barrel.
So that was really him? You sure?
Listen, I think it was. This is why. So what, Tom is skeptical, and I agree. I think I was skeptical in the moment because here's this man with a mask on. It could be anybody. I don't know. It could be a Lil Wayne impersonator, right? But somebody tweeted out a video. It was somebody who was in the suite with him, and someone from his management or his record label. And Lil Wayne was not wearing a mask inside of his suite. And it looked like Lil Wayne to me. I mean, I don't know. I think it was him.
Okay. Well, you know that if he wanted to go, they would make a spot for him.
Yes.
You can bet on that.
I'm pretty sure that when he went on Undisputed or when he did some sort of media this week before he released his new rendition of Green and Yellow, which I assume, Tom, you've been blasting that ever since it came out.
I got 1 minute and 5 seconds of it, because I don't have an account with one of those playlists. I don't know how to get the whole thing, but I listened to a little bit of it.
I'll have to send it to you. But anyway, I'm pretty sure he mentioned that the Packers extended him an invitation to fly out and he was still mulling it over. So anyway, long story short, Lil Wayne was present for the game last night among the 8,000 fans in the stands. But anyway, let's get into this actual, the game itself, the highs, the lows, all of that good stuff. One of the marquee matchups heading into this game that we talked about on the podcast, on both of our podcasts last week, was the matchup between the Packers offensive line and the Rams defensive front, specifically defensive lineman Aaron Donald, who was going into this game with torn rib cartilage. And he talked with the local media in LA leading into the game and said that he felt no pain. He's good to go. and that, you know, it didn't seem like there was going to be any sort of snap count on him heading into the game Saturday night. Anyway, long story short, the offensive line, you know, in hockey terms, we would refer to a goalie as someone that has a shutout or has a really strong performance. They stand on their heads. And I would say that the offensive line stood on their heads last night against the Rams pass rush. They kept Aaron Rodgers' jersey clean, clean, clean. Only had one quarterback hit all night, no sacks. Why was the Packers offensive line able to stand so strong against the Rams defensive front?
Well, first, you know, the elephant in the room, I guess you would say, was that Donald was not himself. I mean, he has this rib injury. They were able to freeze it, but I don't think he looked anything like the guy who was terrorizing the Seahawks. But as I wrote in my column, I'm not sure that him at full strength would have made a difference. I think they put up 484 yards. That's more yardage than anybody has put up against them all year. They rushed for 188 yards. That's more rushing yards than anybody has gained against them. I mean, seven of their last 10 games, they held teams under 100 yards. So it's not like Aaron Donald is the sole reason that they play like that. They have a good defense. And they did exactly what we talked about during the week. So they protected when the Rams rushed four. And they got really good performance out of Billy Turner handling Leonard Floyd. He did not have a single sack. I mean, this is a guy who had 10 and a half sacks, two sacks against the Seahawks in the wild card, and he was shut out. So was Donald. I mean, they did not sack Aaron Rodgers, and he only got hit once. So that's just phenomenal what they've been able to do. And, you know, I think Elgton Jenkins is sort of the poster child for them. They are tough and they're unwielding. They're on to the next play. And we saw Aaron Donald get really frustrated. I mean, Elgton Jenkins was not intimidated by Aaron Donald. He was blasting people. So I think that's what we saw. And I think if they get a rematch with the Buccaneers, it's going to be really interesting to see how they protect this time around.
And not to mention, Elgton Jenkins drew that penalty too on Aaron Donald. They were getting a little chippy during the game. And what was the exact penalty that Donald had? I think it was
a personal foul.
Yeah.
He yanked down on Jenkins' face mask and Jenkins smartly didn't respond. But he was frustrated because Jenkins was just had him in a grip and wouldn't let go. And Donald got ticked. Now, as you pointed out to me in the press box and Corey Linsley confirmed later, Elgton Jenkins is a talker on the field. So yes, he must have said something that really ticked Aaron Donald off.
Perhaps we'll get to the bottom of that in the coming week and see maybe if Jenkins can go into a bit of detail. I'm curious.
Yes, I'd like to hear what some of his lines are.
I'm sure he has some good ones if he likes to trash talk. But anyway, so contrast that though with the Packers defensive front. I mean, like I said, we go into this game talking extensively about the Rams defensive front, and ultimately it's the Packers defensive front that steals the show. They had four sacks on quarterback Jared Goff last night, which is the most he has been taken down all season. Why were they able to get home so often last night, especially in the second half of the game? I think three of their four sacks came in the second half.
Yeah, well, Kenny Clark was playing out of his mind. I mean, he's been playing great the last half of the season. And really, he should have had two sacks. All Rashawn Gary did on that one was fall on top of the guy that on top of Goff as Kenny Clark was bringing him down. But, you know, the Rams also were missing their left guard. David Edwards, a big, strong kid from Wisconsin. People around here remember him. And they just took advantage of that, and they took advantage of talent up front. They had a talent advantage in the middle. They played their base defense a lot more, or at least they played a five-man front, with three defensive linemen, a lot more than we've seen. And they did the smart thing. They decided they were going to stop the run game. Cam Akers was going to be their focus. And I think, you know, when you got a guy like Kenny Clark and you don't double him constantly, you know, you are risking him blowing up all the run lanes and getting some pass rush on you.
Yes, and we saw defensive coordinator Mike Pettine opt to go with five-man fronts, especially early on in the game, and to try to limit and attack the Rams' rushing attack. Cam Akers held to 90 yards on 18 attempts, averaging about 5 yards per carry, which is still a considerable amount. However, it was not the difference maker. And especially, you know, you look at the Rams really weren't able to get much going through the air either. They were without slot receiver Cooper Kupp, who was inactive last night as he was dealing with knee inflammation all week, which was, you know, how much did that impact their ability to really run that offense the way they wanted to?
Oh, it hurt them badly because you saw they really couldn't stretch the field. The Packers let them stretch it horizontally, but they would not let them stretch it vertically. And not that Cooper Kupp is necessarily a deep threat, but when he's getting open in the middle, you know, you have to start thinking about how you're going to take him out. And sometimes that requires a safety. And then all of a sudden you're opening some lanes for Robert Woods or Josh Reynolds to go deep. And the Packers just did not let them throw the ball down the field. So that was really impressive. And one other thing I forgot to mention when we were talking about the defensive line play, Rashawn Gary was getting up in Andrew Whitworth's mug all night long. I was shocked by that. A couple times I saw him ball rush Andrew Whitworth, a guy who's been around forever, 330 pounds and smart as a whip. And he just couldn't handle Gary's strength. And, you know, that's something, no matter who they play, whether it's, well, especially New Orleans with that offensive line, they're going to need Gary big time. So he has to have another game like that.
Let's move on now to look a little bit at this Packers offense as well. In contrast, you know, another pretty successful night. Let's start on the ground, though. Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, and A.J. Dillon, all three of the backs were used, especially in the first half, very extensively and very interchangeably. You saw some 21 personnel packages with Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon on the field at the same time. And then we also saw, you know, Jamal Williams on later downs, you know, the bruiser trying to pick up first downs and whatnot. But what was kind of the game plan from the outset before A.J. Dillon got injured from Packers head coach Matt LaFleur when it came to attacking the Rams defensive front on the ground?
Yeah, I think the strategy was to run inside, was to just take it right at their defensive front. I don't think they were afraid to run at Aaron Donald. They definitely didn't run away from him every time, but I mean, they didn't always run right into him either. They ran between the tackles as well as I've seen them do in a while. And you know what was really the most fascinating part to me, and I'm eager to talk to LaFleur about it again because I didn't get to ask him about it, is that, you know, they kept running that same play where every time Dillon and Jones were in the game together, they'd motion Jones out and then they'd give it to Dillon, and they did it over and over again until I think finally they, you know, until the Rams reacted to it, then they threw it out to Jones or they threw a play action. I can't remember, but that's the essence of their offense. Run the same looking play over and over again, and then do different things out of it.
And then A.J. Dillon gets hurt. So on a carry, he fumbles the ball, and luckily for the Packers, Aaron Rodgers is able to recover it. Otherwise, the Rams are right down there, close to the red zone and close to to really changing the tide of that game. But Rodgers is able to recover the ball. However, AJ Dillon leaves the game with a quad injury and does not return. We don't have any updates for you on AJ Dillon. And of course, we'll keep you posted on PackersNews.com. But, you know, how big of a concern is a quad injury, or at least, you know, when he was walking off, he couldn't put any pressure on his leg. Yeah. He had to come off with the assistance of trainers.
I'm guessing it's a Charlie horse that he got kicked in the thigh or kneed in the thigh, but I haven't had a chance to look at it again. As someone on Twitter pointed out, how does that guy hurt his thigh? You know, he's all thighs, you know, it's like he has the biggest thighs in the world. How can he hurt him? But I guess there's a lot of target there. The way Jamal Williams ran, I don't think it's a big loss. If Jamal Williams plays like that again, they're fine. I don't think they will miss all that much not having AJ Dillon.
So now let's take a look at the passing game. So again, coming into this game, a lot of focus on wide receiver Devontae Adams, cornerback Jalen Ramsey, the all-pro versus the all-pro, although it was pretty accepted going into the game that Ramsey would not be matched up on Devontae Adams all night. Adams is used all over the formation. LaFleur likes to put him in the slot, likes to leave him outside. And Ramsey primarily is an outside corner. And that's essentially what he did all night. However, there were some select plays when Ramsey did travel with Devontae Adams.
Yeah, well, the one most noticeable was on the goal line. When Adams starts out on the right side, he motions all the way to the left. And then he comes in jet motion back the other way. And Ramsey's following him. So Rodgers knows it's man coverage, at least on Adams. But what was really fascinating to me was that on that side, so on the right side, I can't remember who it was, if it was Tanyan or Lazard, they ran a little route to sort of confuse the other corner, the slot corner. And as Ramsey's coming across, that guy took a false step towards Adams and got in Jalen Ramsey's way. And it was an easy touchdown for Adams, and Ramsey was just furious with that guy. He was screaming at him, you know, because he took this wrong step and it got in Jalen Ramsey's way. But that's, you know, it's part of the game. It's probably part of the design of the play. So Adams didn't have a real impactful game, but it didn't matter. He, you know, we talked about this during the week too, that it was going to be up to some of the other guys to show up. And Alan Lazard was the one who did.
Yes. Well, first of all, before we move on, I thought that, yeah, the play design of that touchdown was fantastic. It worked out extremely well. And yes, look at Alan Lazard. He was targeted 8 times, had 4 receptions for 96 yards and a touchdown. And that touchdown came, you know, not too long after a pretty important drop on a drive, and Rodgers still decided to go back to him. And, you know, he ended up beating a pair of defensive backs for a 58 yard touchdown. Yeah. How critical was Lazard in last night's performance?
Well, you know, because the attention was paid to Adams. So, you know, as Rodgers said, they sort of played 2 different coverages in the secondary. It was sort of a quarters type coverage on one side and like a cover 2 on the other, so that they could double Devontae Adams, which left, you know, a guy who could run down the seam and open. And that's exactly what Lazard does really well. He's done that all year long. He did it against New Orleans. He did it against Minnesota in the opener. He's deceptively fast and he's a good route runner. And, you know, he dropped the first one. But, you know, he's Alan Lazard. It wasn't quite the same as Valdez-Scantling dropping a ball, because he's done it all year. Alan Lazard hasn't done it all year. And so I don't think there was ever a hesitation to go back to him. I think they looked at that as an anomaly. You know, if it had it been Valdez-Scantling, they might have thought twice about going back to it. But yeah, they called it again. And this time it was really a smart play. So I think it was third and two, I believe. And they come out with two tight ends. Lazard is the only wide receiver. And it clearly looks like a run play. And they wind up, I believe it was play action. They wind up just Lazard runs by two defensive backs and it's a touchdown. So gutty call at that point in the game.
So Lazard, not the only other receiver able to get involved, as you mentioned, Valdes-Scantling also had a drop, however, 4 receptions for 33 yards. Robert Tonyan was 4 of 4 for 60 yards as well. Equanimeous St. Brown with a big 27-yard reception. Aaron Jones getting involved in the passing game. So they're getting help from all across the roster, the depth chart. And we've seen that. It's something that we've seen all season. And that is the next steps that general manager Brian Gutekunst was expecting from Alan Lazard, from Robert Tonyan at the outset of the season. That's what he was banking on. He was banking on development when he didn't draft a wide receiver.
And really what that, this is the philosophy of the Kyle Shanahan, McVay, LaFleur offense, is that you don't have to have great wide receivers. You don't have to have great skill people to run the ball more than anything else. And you will help your receivers and quarterbacks by all the different ways that they run the ball and play action and make pass plays look like run plays and all of that. So that's kind of the philosophy they've had. You know, you look at the 49ers and the Rams, none of them have a Davante Adams type wide receiver. They just have good, solid wide receivers of different types. And so I think that's what they were banking on this year.
We would be remiss if we did not talk a little bit about the Packers special teams and their performance last night. I think the biggest, it's easy to go to the blunders. The biggest error we saw was a botched extra point. Perhaps the biggest issue to come out of that was the fact that kicker Mason Crosby emerged a bit banged up afterwards. It looked like he was favoring his left shoulder after he was picked up off the ground. He went to the sideline, and then at halftime, he was in the locker room the longest. He was the last one to come out onto the field. And he was able to finish the rest of the game, which is certainly good news for the Packers. What exactly happened on that play, and how did Mason Crosby end up on the ground in the first place?
Yeah, well, it was a god-awful snap from Hunter Bradley. I don't know how you make a snap like that. I mean, it was all the way to J.K. Scott's right. He had to, like, make a third baseman diving catch on it and try to pull it back, but there was no way. And then he did the dumbest thing possible, which was flip it to Crosby. I can't believe that that is their emergency play for a missed extra point. I mean, to me, that's got to come down to either panic or coaching. And you don't flip it to your kicker and expect him to run it in for the extra point. I mean, it's not going to happen. So if anything, Scott should pull that out, get up, and try to throw the ball, but he, or just fall on it. He panicked and flipped it to Crosby, and then Crosby gets crushed by, you know, tacklers and injures his shoulder. You would think that the shoulder wouldn't affect a kicker, but I think everything affects a kicker, because if he's hurting one way, then he's probably favoring that side. And there's so much equilibrium that needs to be, that goes into kicking a field goal, that I think it probably did affect him. And we did see on that field goal right at the end of the first half, he barely pushed it through and it was a short field goal. So yeah, they're going to keep their fingers crossed that that isn't really serious.
Yes, that would be a major loss if Crosby weren't able to continue on in this postseason. However, the Packers are intelligent. They understand that, especially this season, due to COVID restrictions, they're not allowed to easily sign kickers off the street if need be. So they have stashed some players on the practice squad. Kicker J.J. Molson, punter Ryan Winslow are there if the Packers need them in this postseason run. And I'm sure the Packers hope it doesn't come to that, but We'll see exactly how Mason Crosby progresses as the week goes, but something to keep in mind there going forward. And then a couple of other injury updates. So we did talk about AJ Dillon and the quad injury, no update there. Inside linebacker Chris Barnes left the game early in the first half. I don't recall which play exactly it was that he got injured on, but he went back to the locker room for a brief period of time and came back with a club on his left hand. And regardless of the club, he was still able to make some plays. He nearly had an interception toward the end of the game. Perhaps if it weren't for the club, maybe he would have made that. But, you know, hindsight is 20/20. Barnes has fractured his left thumb, and he's expected to play with some sort of club for the rest of the postseason. However, he should be able to go. How difficult is it to operate with one of those things on your hand, Tom?
It's hard. I know Clay Matthews had to do it several times. For Clay Matthews, it was more difficult because he's got to use his hands more to shed blockers. For Chris Barnes, I think he'll be okay. I mean, there's times he needs that hand to get up and, you know, when he's got to take on an offensive lineman, but he can still wrap up. He can still, he just doesn't have to use it quite as much as a guy who's on the defensive front or a cornerback. So I think he'll be okay. It's just that interception, if they had really needed it, you know, the club, I think you're right. I think the club was the reason he didn't come up with it. And who knows if that's a situation where it's a tie game or they're behind, that would have been a really critical play. So he'll be able to still play. It just, there might be an instance or two where it affects him.
Yep, we'll keep an eye on that as the week progresses. We'll see his availability in practice, but it sounds like he should be able to go. So looking ahead to the slate of games this afternoon, I suppose there's only one game that the Packers have their eye on, although I am very excited for Chiefs-Browns, and I will be turning that on as soon as it starts. So if you're listening to this after Sunday, I suppose this will be old news, but still, I think there's value in discussing this. So NFC matchup, Saints-Buccaneers, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, which of these two teams do the Packers most want to see next weekend in the NFC Championship game?
I think... If I had to pick, I would say the I least want to see the Saints, just because they've got two, they're like the Packers in that they have two dynamic offensive targets. They got Alvin Kamara and they got Michael Thomas. And I think those two guys combined put a lot of pressure on a defense like the Packers have. I think the Packers will do better if they face Tampa Bay's defense. I think they'll be able to handle it. They saw the speed of it. They know a lot more about it now. And the way they're playing, I think they can handle it. But New Orleans is going to put up points, and it could turn out into a shootout. And they're a big play team. They have really good special teams. And so it's not a great matchup. I still think they could beat both of these teams. I think they're good enough to beat both of these teams. But I guess if I had to pick one, I would say New Orleans is the one they don't want to face.
Tom Brady has played in every which weather on the face of the planet with the New England Patriots. It's not much of an advantage to have him come up to Green Bay. However, the Saints and the Dome team, might be somewhat of an advantage. However, I haven't looked at the forecast for next weekend yet. I don't know how accurate forecasts are seven days in advance, but something to keep an eye on. It ended up snowing during the game a little bit last night, and I don't think the expectation was that it would. I think the expectation was that it was going to stop before the game. It wasn't a lot of snow, let's be real here, but it was coming down. It was cold out.
You know, I was surprised. I did not see a whole lot of slipping. Usually when they pull the tarp up and it's been cold, you know, dew forms and you see some slipping. I didn't see a lot of slipping, and I didn't think Jared Goff had any problems throwing the ball, even with a broken thumb and in the cold. So It's got to be colder than 35 degrees for it to be a factor, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see exactly what it's supposed to look like next weekend, but we'll keep you guys updated over on PackersNews.com. We'll probably come back on here and we'll chat with all of you once the Packers have a better sense of who their opponent is going to be for next weekend. Is there anything else we wanted to chat about today, Tom, before we wrap things up?
So they are locked into the 2:40 game, right? Or what is the time slot? Something like that.
Ooh.
I think we know that they're going to play in the afternoon. We were talking about it in the press box last night, and I think they alternate times, which conference plays in the late game and which plays the early. And I believe the AFC played the early last year. So
you're correct. It's 2:05 p.m. Central Time on Fox next weekend on Sunday.
So what that means, I have no idea. I guess it means if it's really cold, it won't be as cold because it'll be the afternoon. But yeah, it'd be an afternoon game.
An afternoon game. Perhaps it means different things depending on where in the world you are, if you'll be awake. I don't know. I get fans from Europe tech tweeting at me, telling me when it's certain games they prefer, certain times they prefer. So hopefully wherever you are, 2:05 p.m. Central works for your schedule so you can watch the game.
For sure. And before we go, I want to apologize to all the live blog people for the massive fail we had. It was a system-wide for all Gannett newspapers. People couldn't log on, and that affected our ability to post the blog. So I apologize for that. We got going in the second half, but we will have that fixed for the NFC Championship game.
Yes, believe me, there is no one more frustrated than Tom when it comes to the live blog. He takes that very seriously.
Very frustrated.
But I'm glad you were able to get it up and running. And to be fair, I enjoyed your insights over on Twitter. So if you're not following Tom on Twitter, or if you're not on Twitter, use at your own discretion. However, Tom, I enjoyed seeing your insights over there as well. It was still a lot of fun.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. So cool, everyone. Yeah, we'll chat with all of you soon once we have a better sense of who the Packers are going to play next week. Make sure you're subscribed to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. We are all over the place, so you have truly no excuse. Plus, we'll just show up right in your feeds. Also, make sure you're checking out PackersNews.com, JSOnline.com for all of your Packers coverage. For Tom Silverstein, I am Olivia Reiner. We will see you next time.